All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Justin Cohen Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Justin, how are you, sir?
Joey Docs, good to see you, man.
Pleasure's mine. Always love being at the scenic offices of Kotler, Hernandez, and Cohen.
A little more scenic because of who our guest is today, man. He's got this nice suit on, making us look like schlubs.
That's right.
That's what my people say, schlubs.
World traveler, guy from Miami. Yeah. What brought you? First of all, let's introduce our guest,
sure.
if you would.
So this is, I have the great pleasure of introducing a personal friend and fantastic freaking attorney, Wesley Cornish. The Cornerstone Legal Group. He is the man, the myth, the legend. Although I don't get to see him as much as I would like because he did hightail it down to Florida for warmer pastures, although I cannot blame him. It is always great to have him here. Wes, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, guys. It's good to see you again, Joe. And always a pleasure to see you, Justin. If you can't see, my suntan is just beaming right now.
Yeah, so, and Wes is no stranger to the broadcast. What track you down to Miami?
Well, I mean, the weather, the pandemic.
Is his girlfriend listening? Wait, is he allowed to answer that question?
I don't think that WWDB, by the way, as we know, of course, the streaming channel airs everywhere on the planet, but
yes.
Chances are, you know, she's not listening now,
right.
So you can be honest. Yeah. We're not going to be honest. I mean, integrity's not important.
Exactly. We're the trust tree, right?
Is the firm, in other words, is it a firm that operates in Philly and in Florida?
So, actually, Joe, we have exciting news. We operate across the United States because of the area law that we practice. We've been out trying to empower victims of child sexual abuse and just child physical abuse. And basically, that takes us everywhere. And we're not going to stop until we can bring justice to every state. So our mission has spread from just the Philadelphia region to across the country.
And I will tell you something. I know this guy is pioneering. I mean, for those who are, you know, read the news or you know, just conscious, have heard about the systematic abuse that's being uncovered in a lot of these, what do you call them, behavioral schools, reform schools?
Juvenile placement centers.
That are all around the country. And I know we certainly have a bunch here in Pennsylvania. But I can personally vouch that Wesley is the hardest freaking man in the country because I get emails from him anywhere from 2 in the morning to 5 in the morning. And then I'm like, all right, at some point he's probably going to have to, you know, at least take a power nap. Nope, getting emails through the morning, through the afternoon, through the night. Me, you know, he is truly, truly pioneering a lot of the uncovering of some of the really horrible stuff that's going on across the country.
So, you know, we've had this conversation, Wes, but, these can be emotional shows.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And it's the civil side of sexual assault, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then do you handle the criminal side as well or no?
I do. I used to. That's how I initially got into this work, but I handled it from a different aspect. What I used to do is I was mostly a criminal lawyer, and I started getting a lot of clients who had drug abuse problems, alcohol abuse problems, and when I really started digging into what happened, it seemed like almost all of those clients had suffered either physical abuse or sexual abuse at these juvenile placements. And I want to be clear, Joe, I don't just represent people who were sexually abused. I represent any victim of child abuse.
So, a couple things. Life itself, everybody's had, almost no one gets escapes unscathed.
Right.
Okay. And you can think back, and many people can think back, and if they weren't fortunate enough to have two parents or,
right,
you know, and sit there and say, why me? Is this is the only, this is my only shot at my life. And I can only imagine, okay, the destruction that somebody goes through in the cases, the types of things we're about to talk about. But right now in the city of Philadelphia, and this, I don't know if sexual abuse was a part of it, but the boy in the box. Did you hear about that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, you did.
Is this in Philly?
Yeah. 1957. My father-in-law had just got on the police force.
Right.
Okay. And I say this because when something happens to a child, okay, well, there's nothing worse. And having said that, they just announced the boy's name today. 65, I think it was 65 years. Because
was this the boy? This is the they found. This was a boy who was killed, right?
He was killed.
I did see something about it, but did they find out who did it?
Well, they got his name. They got he's got relations to a prominent family. In either PA or Delaware, one of them.
Yeah. What, did they identify him through DNA or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, the reason, and I say that, and I don't know if there was sexual assault involved, but you see, I think, I didn't see the police, the conference.
Right.
Okay, the press conference, but there's been, if you've read.
Was this a famous cold case?
Yes.
Okay.
Massively famous, but okay. How many police officers were, you know, like older, obviously they're older
right
now. Some of them are in their 80s, 90s.
Right.
You know, there's a couple left, but that the case changed their life, and they worked diligently and couldn't. So it impacted lives like there was no tomorrow. And Wes, I'm obviously not in law enforcement or an attorney, but there are some of his siblings. They said some of his siblings are alive. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Which means this case is back on, you know, because why didn't they report it?
Right.
You know, in other words, but, you know, a lot of times, and I kind of take it over to your side, but before individuals like yourself delved into what goes on in a lot of the civil sexual abuse cases, a lot of these things went uncovered. I mean, not, you know, covered up. And so a lot of the things that you're doing and we're going to get into, you know, some of the institutional type stuff. You know, it's real live hero stuff that you're doing, but it's incredibly devastating because most of these people, and you talk about the boy in the box probably.
Right.
It comes at the hands of people they trust.
I couldn't put it better. I mean, I'm this is just a personal opinion on this, but I think the boy in the box, just based on his age, about being somewhere between 3 to 5 years old, I think that was a family member.
Of course.
Probably who did that. Obviously, you know, we're speaking to the public now, so I don't know what it was. I don't have any special information.
Right, of course. Right.
Being that, but usually in that kind of situation, especially if there's other siblings there, I mean, child abuse, the sad thing about child abuse, physical and sexual, is that it usually starts with somebody that's very close to the home. And ultimately, where a lot of the people that I work with, that I come across, that I try to help, I'm seeing them the third or fourth time they've been abused, because they've been abused, because a lot of times they were abused when they were younger by a family member, by a family friend, somebody in the neighborhood, something like that. And then what happens is, and it's horrible, but a lot of these, the individuals, pedophiles, people who abuse children, are very adept, very smart, very okay. cunning, and they can see when a child has been previously abused, and they have ways to manipulate them. So a child who's previously been sexually abused is way, way more likely to get abused in the future than this adult abuses them. Usually when the child cries to that adult and says, I need help with that, and that adult abuses them, then the child will act out, and then they get sent to a juvenile placement where they get abused again, because the juvenile placement saying, why are you not behaving? Why are you yelling? Why are you fighting? And the only way the juvenile placements usually know to stop that is by physically restraining or hitting a kid. And what happens when you're doing that? You're not addressing the real issue.
It perpetuates the issue, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but we all know from what happened from the grand jury reports about how the Catholic Church shuffled around staff and personnel to avoid liability. And I can tell you, the juvenile placement centers did it just the same level. And they allowed a lot of predators, especially at places like Glen Mills and Devereaux, to be able to have access to these children and to repeatedly rape them and sexually assault them. It's very sad.
Let me just say this. You know, you think, I've done a number of shows on this, and one of the things that we talked about is the fact that these predators are very sophisticated. You look at a Jerry Sandusky, right?
Right.
There's a guy who created a nonprofit. He's yeah. got a okay, and you know, so the when the more the laws get sophisticated, the more these human beings,
right?
What's Larry Nassar from Michigan State?
Michigan State, okay. Yeah.
The system often fails them. I can when we talk about this, my mind spins to a couple areas. You talk, you know, it's this happens in a lot of different, you know, the private, or, you know, institutions, the Glenn Mills, the Devereaux, and then you see a lot of different areas. But Councilman David O in Philadelphia is a friend.
Sure.
And I don't know if you ever heard the story about what happened to his son.
No.
Councilman O, and I've done shows on it, right? And he was in the Daily News.
Right.
It's funny. He's a Republican. I'm a Democrat. I'm a labor guy. He's one of the. I always tell him you shouldn't be in politics. You're too nice. too nice. His integrity level has never been. He's incredible.
Right.
And you know he's. But we do agree on a lot of things, and I'll tell you why. Because he's a common sense guy. He teaches karate.
Uh-huh.
To his son. Right now he was in special forces. He was a Marine. All that.
So what you're saying is I could probably kick his ass.
No doubt. Yeah. His ass. That's what I'm trying to say. I'd like to get Justin Cohen and David O.
And let's get this.
That's what I'm talking about. David, I'll be calling you later today.
Yeah, please don't.
Put the action on Bet Parks.
Yeah.
Hold on. Two words. It's on. Okay. But so he was training his son, and the youngster goes down on his shoulder. Right, you know, and David says, "Let me take him to the hospital." It was like a Sunday. I don't know all the facts, but he takes him in. They go to CHOP. I think it was CHOP.
Right,
one of the big
Philly hospitals.
Right. No, the kid's in there a while. They called Child Protective Services without even talking. Now they didn't realize
just because they see a little boy injured or something.
But the point was. They didn't know, and it doesn't matter, but it does matter a little because David had not had a lot of experience in that area, even though he was a city councilman at large.
Right.
So he goes in, and he goes, David's a city councilman. Now, he's somebody who can actually do something about it.
Right.
So David's going, okay, they can, and it didn't happen in this instance, but they can, without due process, put your child in the system. You cannot get your. Now they go into these private homes and the things that happen often. But, and then you get situations where the kid, they won't put them in and they're worse in their own home. So it happens a lot. Child services has.
By the way, does this discourage people from bringing their kids to the hospital who are legitimately hurt?
I don't know if a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, this is the first time thought about that.
Well, David got to the bottom of that situation and what he uncovered. And by the way, you know, he went to the powers that be in that area, and he's a Philadelphia city councilman at large.
Right.
And he was somewhat, there were innuendos put to him that if he continued to push in this area, he said it on the air. This guy's got more integrity than anybody I know.
My point is
the sexual abuse that a lot of these young people want, and the nightmare stories that you hear about in the, you know, in some of the foster care areas. Yeah. Okay, and not to mention the foster care homes, okay, unprecedented. Then you have situations where they don't have enough people at child services. They get a complaint, don't follow it up, and the kid ends up dead at the hands of somebody in his own family.
Right.
So these situations, okay, and I'm talking...
What a tough thing to navigate, though, man.
Well, that's right. So what I'm talking about is... the system and how difficult it is, you know, to a guy who was running for judge. I did a podcast for him.
Right.
He was adopting a kid. He went to all his political friends. It was a great situation. The city, the prosecutor, not the prosecutor, but at the family court, the actual the Philadelphia representative attorney, I don't know what you call them,
yeah,
because they're not prosecutors,
right,
but they were all supportive. The judge got ticked off because he went to his political support, turned them down. That child was in the middle of a horrible, they were getting molested in the place that they were. The judge turns them down. They went through five more years of sexual molestation before he did finally get the opportunity to adopt that person. So there's so many areas where kids get you know, where people just, you know, they get screwed over.
Yeah, they're exposed. And
oh, yeah.
So the Glenn Mills case, which, again, I only know from reading the Inquirer and stuff. I mean, is that what we were talking about, a reform school?
Yeah, yeah.
In the Philly area?
Yeah, talk about...
So, yeah, because I'm curious about this. Yeah.
So, to really talk about what you're saying, Joe, you're really hitting on some excellent points. And I think it's important...
That's a first.
you know what? Let me reiterate. What else is new?
Yeah.
Come on, you'll get used to it throughout the broadcast.
Yeah, right.
So there's really two types of situations you're talking about there. Yes, we do deal with a lot of people who get put into the foster homes. Unfortunately, the situation you're talking about with Councilman O, which I was unaware of, that those situations tend to be more in the minority of the kind of situations I am. Obviously, anytime the government's going to take a child away from their parents, that is a huge deal, regardless if it happens a little bit or a lot.
Right.
The more common, and this goes to your question, Justin, is the more common situation is for these juveniles to be abused when they go to reform or juvenile placement facilities, because a lot of the people in these facilities, you have to remember, they're almost like prison guards. So the people get hired. So they don't have to have very much training. They don't have to have the highest educational.
You're talking about the staff members.
I'm talking about the staff members. And it's almost like the institution, the facility, is incentivized to pay the least amount of bills, to try to give the least amount of medical care to these children. And a lot of the – and also – what's the number one thing? We're all lawyers here talking. They're trying to limit lawsuits and liability.
Right.
So how come abuse is so prevalent, especially in a place like Glenn Mills, is that you have an adult, and it's not just, and I thought when I started doing this, it was just men. There are a lot of women sexual predators out
there,
more than you would think. Yeah. So when you have a place like, let's take it. You have foster care, you have a reform school like Glenn Mills, and then you have a place like Devereux where people have developmental difficulties. So when the kids get put in the foster care and they didn't do anything wrong, obviously that's one of the biggest tragedies. That's harder for us to kind of screen out, because that's more on a one-on-one basis. But when these kids get sent to reform schools or juvenile placements like Glenn Mills, the staff there know that these kids are getting sent there pursuant to a court order, which means that they were adjudicated as committing some type of criminal act or something that was improper. So when they get there, the prison guards essentially get to hold power over them when they get released, because they go and tell the judge. So these guards will sit there and say, you need to perform this sexual act, or if you report what happens there, you're never going to get to take a home pass. You're never going to get released from here. And there have been situations where male and female staff members to continue sexually abusing clients of mine have went to the courts and lied to the courts, the probation officers, to keep these children there for another 6, 8, 12 months. And then the worst is when you talk about the third category of people who have developmental difficulties.
And these are all minors, right, Wes?
Everybody's
there under 18?
Everybody's. Okay. And usually we're not talking like close to adulthood. We're talking people usually who are 15 and younger.
Kids,
yeah. So when you get to Devereux, a lot of the people went to Devereux have developmental disabilities of all types.
Right.
And those people who want to abuse people who have developmental difficulties know there's always going to be an issue. Same
right.
as with the Glenn Mills kind of
your word
clients.
Against mine.
Well, it's not even that. It's at least with the Glenn Mills type of clients, they can say something. A lot of times when you abuse people who have mental difficulties, they might not even be able to verbalize that they've been getting abused. So somebody who somebody who's getting abused, who's, and at Devereux, they've had kids there, and I represent clients who were 7, 8 years old when they were there, and they were watching their family members getting molested, because sometimes they would get sent there with a sibling. They were getting molested, and they weren't able to verbalize, because even if they were 25, they have developmental difficulties that makes it harder. So what do people generally tend to do? They tend to ignore those kind of people when they come out because they can't verbalize or put into writing or a way that people generally communicate. So, yeah, that's a huge issue with that.
So, Wes, let me just so I understand real quick. So is the purpose of these reform schools, when they were set up, to be an alternative to juvenile detention facilities?
No. So what they are is they're a type of juvenile detention facility.
It is. Okay. So it's under the umbrella of a juvenile detention
facility. And education institutions?
Pretty much. So what happens is when a child gets, accepting cases like murder where a child's tried as an adult or such, generally the preference is, of the juvenile justice system is that children are redeemable, children can be fixed, children can be healed. So they try not to put children into what are typically adult type of jails. They try to send them to these kind of programs and such, and they try to, and there's so many of these programs because some have different levels of intensity than others. So somewhere like Glen Mills is for people, for juveniles who committed much more serious juvenile crimes than some of the other facilities are.
Right. Okay. So it's almost like a prison system. I mean, you know,
Absolutely. And just thinking about it, there's so many scenarios where our kids get taken advantage of and brutalized.
Right.
Does this go? So I want to obviously talk about how do you often get? Who calls you often? Because how does the kid eventually get to your office to where you can represent them? Because they're these are kids. A lot of them have no idea how to, that somebody like you exists. Number one, do they come off the backs of a criminal case? Or, does your work work in hand in hand with a criminal case? You know, like when I think of A, who you sue, because the scumbag doing it probably doesn't have a damn dime.
Right.
So the civil institution, we get it. The institution, they have insurance, and that's who you go after. But does your case typically work hand in hand with a criminal case, or before or after? And who calls you typically to come into to these cases?
So I have something pretty unique, and I guess you're asking me about a lot of trade craft here, but sure, I'll give you a little something. Like that.
I'm not asking you to do that.
No, it's fine. I'm messing with
Joe's
you.
Joe's gonna go to law school real quick.
Yeah, he's gonna start stealing everybody's clients.
Wait a second, hold on. First of all, you said we're just a bunch of lawyers here. I'm like, well, I guess you could consider me a lawyer with one semester of community college.
There you go. Listen, man. Come on.
He always brings me in with clients, and about after 6 weeks, I'm like, well, I should disclose this first. Yeah. I barely get out of high school. But anyway.
Just being in a union count as being
a
lawyer.
It does, exactly.
Yeah. Two lawyers and a very advanced power.
There you go. Yeah,
I played one on the radio.
Yeah.
But to answer your question.
You taking his notes down?
I did. You better believe I'm recording the whole thing.
So generally, from my experience, I had worked with sexual assault victims, adult and children, for many years. And one of the best ways to get people to do something is that I have them write what happened. I don't get up there, and especially with men, it's much harder because when a man's abused by another man, people should be able to be with whoever they want in life as adults. And if you want to have a homosexual relationship, if you want to have a heterosexual relationship, that is absolutely fine. But it has to be acknowledged that men who are, when they're boys who are heterosexual, who want a heterosexual relationship, when they get molested by another man, it creates all kinds of differences, and it creates all kinds of confusion and issues with them.
Their innocence is taken. And
they don't know, and they're like, and a lot of them, it's, I like girls, but, I don't know, I was confused, my body responded, whatever. And it's hard to sit there and, tell that to another man. It's hard to look them in the face and sit there and just talk about it. And, and also, and on the other, conversely, I represent a lot of females who are victims of childhood abuse, and it's hard for them to sometimes sit in front of a man when a man was the person, or multiple men, or the people who abused them. Ugh. And it's a lot easier when people initially reach out. And a lot of times they want to start telling me about it. I'm like, listen, look, we're going to write this down. And it could be, they could come into my office and, like, we're in one room. Right. They're going to be in another room. They write it out and then we read it. And it's just, it works a lot better for people trying, where I think a lot of people make a mistake is trying to get initially people to immediately start talking about this abuse. One of the things
you mean, like right when they walk in the door, hey, tell me about your whole.
Well, and by the way, you get contacted by the kids or adults who were molested when they were kids.
I get not only them. I get contacted by people who work at the facilities and tell me you got to do something about this facility because they know obviously for instance. Glenn Mills. I'm not saying I got a call from somebody at Glenn Mills, but for instance, Glenn Mills, my name's all over that people know I'm representing a lot of people in that case. I've had it where people from staff, not for that case particularly, but other similar cases, the staff have called up and said, hey, you should, you really got to do stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, when that happens, a call, I mean, when did the police come into this stuff?
So this is a great thing. So the thing is, there's no... The problem, and I'm
talking statute of limitations.
I'm talking about Pennsylvania. Not really so much with that. The issue becomes that in Pennsylvania, there's no real. It's really done haphazardly. It's like nobody's on the same page with it, and so you have schools or institutions like Glenn Mills and Devereux, which have major investigations where people have been arrested and convicted, and they get treated one way, and then you have other places, like I'm going to give you an example, this place called Abraxas, it's in western Pennsylvania, there's about 14 institutions in PA, they're run by the GEO group. The GEO group was the organization a few years ago that had that whole kids in cages controversy at the border where the GEO group thought it was a great idea to stuff hundreds of kids who were crossed from the Mexican border into these little cubicle rooms and leave them there for days and days and days.
Scumbags.
This isn't a Republican or a Democrat thing. I mean, this was done under multiple administrations with this.
Right.
Because this is a private prison company that, again, at the end of the day, they care more about making money than they care about the quality of the residents they're entrusted to take care of. So to answer your question, though, I do want to highlight one thing, Joe, and I think it's really important. And I do want to give some a little positive. There's a positivity coming to what's going on with this. The last few years, more stuff has been coming out. So I want to talk about briefly four people that have kind of brought this to the light. One person I never thought I'd be speaking of here is Paris Hilton. So Paris Hilton, interestingly enough, obviously she had her bad girl persona that. But when she was a child, she actually got sent away, I think it was in Colorado, to one of these type of reform schools where she was brutally abused.
Wow.
I don't know if she was sexually abused, but definitely physically abused, beat up by staff.
Right.
And even somebody like her, where her family owns the Hilton.
Yeah.
Owns the Hilton brand. She wasn't getting taken seriously by the authorities and by other people. And that's her. And she's been speaking out a lot the last few years about it. But as far as it goes in Pennsylvania, the biggest thing that can happen right now would be shining light by removing the statutes of limitations.
Right. Yeah.
So the
but
next
that's a political issue, right?
Well, the next person I want to talk about is I think Representative Mike Rossi. He was a victim when he was a teenager. He was raped by a Catholic priest.
Right.
And by the time he was able to open up, the statute of limitations has passed, and he's been really pushing to try to get victims justice. So, I mean, anybody who's listening out there, if you were sexually abused, if you were physically abused, just because right now you might not be able to bring a suit does not mean there are not people outside of the people talking on this broadcast that are trying to bring justice.
Right.
And the last two people I want to mention, and they're together, is U.S. senators, and they're from the West Coast, oddly enough, Senator Patty Murray and Senator Ron Wyden. Those two senators took it upon themselves to open an investigation into the biggest juvenile placements in the country, one of them being Devereux.
Wow, and Devereaux's that big?
Devereaux is one of the – Devereaux has facilities, I think, in 13, 15 states.
Wow.
And let's just put it this way. They're getting sued in a lot of them.
I'm sure.
But Senator Wyden had opened – he really put this on his back because he wants to expose what's going on, and there's and he's been talking – not as loudly as we want, but he's been talking about potentially a window legislation, which is allowing – at the federal level, allowing victims of sexual and child abuse to be able to bring cases against people
right.
that they might otherwise be barred in other states or otherwise.
So you obviously you represent victims of child yes. you know obviously crime and sexual assault and all them. Do you get now? Are they? Do a number of them come to you that are obviously of age as adults and say, this is what happened to me when I was a kid?
So what happened initially was that's how initially these cases started off because I represent criminal clients and somebody was going for a sentencing case and I'm looking at doing their history of
what
happened. And then I talked to some other clients and they basically told me, yeah, I went to this school, I went to this place. And then, you know, I'll be honest, it's just word of mouth. I mean, when you Joe, the reason I'm so passionate about this is that I was physically abused when I was a child. And I had for years I suffered horrible physical abuse. So when I talk to the people that come in, I'm not talking to them as some lawyer.
Right.
I'm talking to them as the 11-year-old kid who's scared, who knows exactly what they were feeling.
Wow.
Let's do this. Let's go to break. By the way, yeah. Justin, like we said, when you had told me Wes was going to be on the show, these are heavy
yeah.
shows,
yeah.
but beneficial in the fact that young people, older people who it happened to, family members, members of organizations who see it going on, there's a place to go to get, you know, along, obviously, with law enforcement.
It needs to be talked about. It's the only way this stuff's going to come
absolutely.
Out.
That's the best
and be
way.
Prevented.
It's
right.
called sunshine.
Right, exactly.
So let's do this. Let's take a short break.
Sure.
We'll have more from the Justin Cohen Show in just a minute.
Getting injured at work or due to the negligence of another party can be a devastating, sometimes life-altering experience. During these painful times, it's easy for you, a family member, or someone you know to feel like there is no one to turn to. Rest assured that Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Kotler, Hernandez & Cohen have your back. With decades of experience in representing those impacted by work injuries, motor vehicle accidents, slip and fall accidents, defective products, nursing home abuse, neglect, and more, Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Kotler, Hernandez & Cohen will get you the recovery and the justice you deserve. And you will never pay a dime out of pocket because at Kotler, Hernandez & Cohen, they don't get paid unless they win your case. And they like to win. Kotler, Hernandez & Cohen are board-certified attorneys by the New Jersey Supreme Court in both workman's compensation and civil litigation, which is a testament to their willingness to take your case all the way to trial. Call Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Kotler, Hernandez & Cohen at 856-751-7676. That's 856-751-7676. And have a winning team on your side.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Justin Cohen Show on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic show. Wes Cornish from the Cornerstone Group is our guest, and painful discussion when you're talking about civil, child sexual assault and in relation to the civil side of things. I always say, Justin, you and I have talked about it many times, how change happens in the courtroom.
Yes.
You hit these people and they're, you know, so say you have a corporation who owns these, you know, some of these homes like the, you know, I mean, somebody's, you know, you got Glenn Mills and you said Devereaux and all. Well, they're not doing any HR. They're letting anybody work for them. They're molesting the kids. Well, I'll say it was only a criminal case, right? Well, the corporation doesn't hurt when it's just a criminal case. The guy goes to jail. They might take a hit when it comes to the reputation, but it don't hit them in the pocketbook.
Right.
If you don't go after those negligent people who hired those people that are molesting those kids like it's their business. Exactly. So this is big time stuff. Let's talk about Wes. With your law firm and the success that you've had in this area, if we were to sit here and talk about all the potential cases out there, and it was a business idea, which, and I'm being callous about it, but I don't really mean, what I'm saying is there's so much more than that, to that. The culture at your firm, when, you know, creating a relaxed environment. Talk about that, because like you said earlier, really, whether it's a guy, it's a man who was molested by a man or a woman, or it's still a very difficult thing to open up on, and you need to have a sensitive, not only obviously the attorney to be confidential and to be make it comfortable for somebody to call, but also the culture at the firm. Talk about that, what people can expect.
Well, I can tell you the number one thing they can expect when they walk through the door is that they're going to have somebody who takes what they're saying seriously, and they're going to be believed. There's not going to be questioning about it. It's not going to be, there's going to be no blaming. There's no victim shaming, none of that. When they come in, when they write down, or if they feel comfortable enough to talk, they will be taken at their word. And when it's
confidential, right? In other words, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely confidential. And I want to say something real quick to what you just said, Joe. These firms, these businesses, they actually can be held criminally liable. And I think when we talk about hitting these places in the pocketbooks, okay, like for instance, Glenn Mills had already been shut down, but some of these other places like Devereaux, there's cases, there's many cases that we hear in the news. I mean, just for instance, the other day, for instance, the Trump Organization, they were an organization, not the former president himself, but that organization was held criminally responsible for tax issues in New York. There's no reason why going forward with the elected leaders we have that we shouldn't also, in addition to trying to go after the individual staff members who commit these crimes, that these facilities shouldn't be shut down. Because in my opinion, these places are a lot of times worse than the individual staff member offender, because they allow this to keep going on, and they know what's
happening.
Where
does the rubber meet the road in regards to where the mass negligence is with the corporations? Are they not screening these people? I mean, are they creating access? What are a lot of the areas where these organizations are,
where the oversight is?
Yeah.
So I'm going to answer that, and then it's just the answer is just so simple, and it's horrible. And then we'll move on to the thing you were saying. But essentially, it's what I said before. It's all about money. It's all about keeping the lowest bottom line possible. So what would happen is, and I'm going to use Glenn Mills as a perfect example because it came out in the government records, is Glenn Mills goes, hey, you know what? Oh, a current employee of ours recommends this guy to get hired. Well, you know, he's a volunteer, and he deals with children, but he's a volunteer, so he doesn't need to get child abuse background screening. Right. Oh, well, you know what? So there's a rule because it's called the Adam Walsh Act. And John Walsh, he's the famous for
America's Most Wanted. Yeah.
It's In Pursuit Now. Great show. Big John Walsh fan. Went and saw his studio at the Crime and Punishment Museum in D.C. Love John Walsh. He's passionate. And the Adam Walsh Act has a very specific rule in there that people who live in another state but want to get employed in a job in a separate state that deals with children, they have to have the child abuse clearances run in both states. And what a place like Glenn Mills would do is go, well, that costs a lot of money to run these backgrounds. Oh, we don't want to do it. We'll run Pennsylvania. Nothing
but
comes
not,
up in PA.
Right. Oh, great.
And then sometimes they just wouldn't even do these background checks. And there were people who had flags on their record, which would otherwise be like, you can't be around children. Like they might have had a domestic abuse conviction or a simple assault conviction or, you know, a DUI with injury, something like that. So ultimately, at the end of the day, it comes down to these firms wanting to save money and not really caring about the kids that are in their care. They're dollar signs to them. They're just dollar signs.
Usually that's usually the answer, right? It's always money.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, and we could say just about Abraxas. I mean, GEO Group had no problem putting kids in cages and thought that was a great thing at the border. And those were kids who weren't even American citizens. If they're willing to do that to them in America, what do you think they're willing to do to our own citizens?
Right.
But to answer your question, our firm culture, it's just different because we have a lot of family members working in our firm, and this is just personal to us. You know, this is
very personal to you based on what you said before.
Yeah. This is, I can't, when you say something, when you ask a question like that, Joe, it's like hard for me to even describe, just because it's what I wake up and I do in the morning. I don't even think about it.
Well, to
like,
wake up, it assumes you go to sleep, which this kid does not freaking sleep.
Right? By the way, that's a person after my own heart. You get my emails at 1 or 2.
You guys are both.
I'll give you a call at 2 in the morning. We'll just we'll talk sports.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the only time you get work done. Nobody's calling
it's
you.
It's true,
out.
Man. No it's noise. So true. But,
you know, it's interesting though, because I talked to Justin a number of times, and I always sit there and equate the fact that you know what you guys do. You're going to meet that family who lost that loved one in that accident, and that has to be so painful in your area. Okay, you're meeting somebody, whether it's a family member or the person themselves or whatever. And I'm not going to take a shot at this one, but in law school, I keep hearing attorneys say, well, they don't have a course for business, the business of law, so that you know how to.
That is very true.
Okay, but I'll bet, you know, how do you know the sensitivity and to be able to sit in front of that person and listen to those statistics. You know, you're an attorney, a good attorney. You've been doing this a long time, but that, you know, I'm sure there's human beings, you know, that are talk show hosts or they're engineers or they're attorneys that have no sensitivity at all, right? That would not be a good area for them. But the fact of the matter is that how do you do this and you do it with sensitivity and the law? How do you prepare yourself emotionally for that conversation, because it's so painful?
Well, I want to say, one, I actually – surprisingly got business training in a law school. I have to give it up. You know what?
Hold on, Wes. I'd appreciate if you just agree with me on air. Okay? You're the only one.
We're yes men on this radio show.
Well, hey, you know what?
Where'd you go to school, Wes?
I went to Temple. And when you go to a school like Temple, you're not a UPenn graduate who just gets the world gifted to you.
Right.
You got to be gritty. You got to be tough. You got to fight. You got to be Temple made.
Yep.
You got to be Temple tough.
Both my parents met at Temple Law School, man. It's bringing people together.
Temple is amazing. And, and God bearing, they have a great basketball season. It'll be even better.
Yeah, don't hold your breath, man.
But you know what it is, Joe? I think the easiest way for me to deal with it is it's not exhausting to me. I mean, it's exhausting hearing that every other day another facility that I'd never heard of is just rampantly abusing children.
Right.
But for me, it's not difficult because I just look at whoever I'm talking to and I just remember what it was like for me. And I remember all the things I wanted somebody to do and believe me when I did it. Like when I got physical abuse, I actually went and told a teacher who never did anything about it. I actually told two teachers. And I know that when somebody comes into the office, they've probably already talked to two or three people. And the last thing they need is somebody being like, oh, well, I'll get to it.
Right.
Or, you know,
have another door closed on them.
You know, can you hurry up? I got 10 more clients waiting, stuff like that.
This may sound juvenile, but if a kid tells me that, I'm immediately stopping what I'm doing.
You have to.
Yeah.
Literally stopping. I don't care how important the test is or whatever I'm doing. But at the end of the day, somebody let you down. That's what they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make sure that nobody, at least when they come through my door, that never happens to them.
Right.
You know, I mean, there may be other reasons we don't take a case or, you know, we may accept it.
But how about your team? Let me give you an example. You're doing a radio show right now.
Yeah.
You got a big organization, the whole deal. Having that person on the phone, we've talked about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you've shouted out your team on Justin. But now, you know, having that culture at the firm, so where somebody calls and the team understands that, you know, all kinds of calls come in here. Sensitivity training is important, and that people can be comfortable whatever until they get to you. Talk about that.
Well, I try to keep it easy. So what I do is I guess the best way to describe it is I'm a smaller firm in personnel size, but I have due to relationships and people I work with, especially, I would say, Martin Rubenstein of Leve Baldante, Finian Rubenstein, excellent attorney. I work with him in a lot of these cases. So for me, how it is that when I say I'm a small firm like that, nobody else answers my phone I answer my phone. Right. So when anybody calls me, and yes, I get it a lot of times. I'm in court. Yeah. I'm in a jail, so I can't answer the phone. I don't have access to it. But every single person who calls, they get a call back from me. Now, if they're a client I'd known in a long time, it's kind of like, hey, can you just tell me, was this paper filed yesterday or did that mail come in? I'll obviously listen to their message, and I'll have my paralegal call. Right. My paralegal, who is my mother, who retired after being in the school district.
Hardest working paralegal in the business, man. She's a machine.
Oh, my God. She works harder than me. Yeah. she knits me she makes me a quilt, and then
and then also do the paralegal work. I love it.
Essentially, when people call, I'm the person returning call, and whenever they come in, they're coming into a family business. So, because I don't believe she's going to hear this before it happens, but before my soon-to-be fiance.
Hey, breaking some news here. Hope she's not listening.
She won't hear this until after the day.
There you go.
But she actually works at the firm, too.
Oh, you're being awful presumptuous there.
Look at that. Boy.
I don't know when
he's taking the
happen.
Yes for granted, man.
He is.
Biggest odds only having it like 3-1.
We gotta have him back on after the big game. Yeah. Right? How'd that go? I don't want to talk.
hey, as an Eagles fan, I had to go to a Giants bar wearing a Saquon Barkley shirt. Oh, yeah, it's done.
He's totally sold out for
here,
man.
Yeah.
We know who the boss is.
Yeah, that was no surprise there, man.
Oh my God.
I love my wife, but I have my limits.
There are some lines that cannot be drawn.
Yeah.
She's a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Done.
Well, we didn't say
the hottest,
Cowboys.
Smartest, everything in it. We aren't
going to it. It happened, man.
This didn't work out, hon.
The thing is, I don't have to wear my uniform on a shirt. I got the Philly special tattooed
he
on me.
Does,
so,
man. Yeah. Ain't no question in your loyalty.
Yeah, we know where my admission ticket is.
Me and him text during games. So, listen, this guy is is all in.
Well, this show is over.
No, but to answer your question, it's a family-run business, and the only people I'd ever work with on these kind of cases are people who take it the same way I
absolutely.
Do. And the reason I bring up Martin Rubenstein of Leva Baldante again
fantastic.
He is. And you know what? He's the kind of person that I like to work with as an attorney.
Well, he's a total gentleman, number one.
Absolutely. And when he gets on the phone or we come in together with one of these survivors who's going to take back their life and take back their power, he's one of the most successful attorneys I've ever met. The man sues the Archdiocese successfully. More than almost anybody I know for abuse.
Right.
And he's busier than anybody I know. If somebody walks into his office, one of those claims or one of those issues, it don't matter how busy he is, he takes the time until it's done. He doesn't rush them.
Right.
He doesn't
do anything
like that.
How do you know Martin?
I know Martin through a mutual friend of ours. He had introduced me a few years ago when I had started doing these cases. And the first time I met Martin, Martin Rubenstein. But the first time I met him, we sat down. I talked to his partner, John Baldante, and they were literally some of the easiest people I've ever met to work with. And it was like, we're going to go get some justice for these people. And I said, absolutely. And we sat down and we spent 5 minutes saying hello, getting to know each other. And we spent the next like 3 hours figuring out how we're going to get justice for everybody.
That's awesome.
He's incredible. I want to ask a really important question. And by the way, the culture and what you do for people and young people and those people who survived that situation. God, some people have not survived it. Is phenomenal. So well put. Is it a contingency fee agreement? Because a lot of people might think that it's
a good question.
Too important, too expensive to come out and see an attorney like yourself.
It's always a contingency fee. The only reason.
What is that? Explain
it. So a contingency fee is where I only get paid money if the client gets a settlement, a judgment.
So there's no out-of-pocket cost for the client.
In reality, what it is, the client only has to pay money if they win or settle their case.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
they're not coming out of pocket.
They can't be out of pocket any money at the end.
No.
They'll never lose money.
No, they're never
going to
lose money.
Right. If you don't win, they don't have to pay.
Right.
If you win, your payment comes out of the settlement.
Yes, and the reason I do it that way is that I've had plenty of people who are willing to hire me to do the lawsuits, and I do it that way because at the end of the day, in these kind of cases, the client and the person you're working with needs to know you believe in their cause as much as you do. And nothing right. says you believe in somebody as much as a contingency fee does, because the contingency fee, what it means is I have to pay the costs up front to file right. the case, to do depositions,
you
all
have
those
to
costs.
Pay it.
I have to, my as firm pays it. And we're talking some of these child abuse cases, I'm not even joking, they might be $50,000, $60,000 just for one of them
right.
to get them to court. And I'm telling you, if I represent thousands of people in this same situation, and the only way I'm going to ever put my money up is and represent them as cases if I believe them, and I wouldn't accept money from somebody on that. I feel
how
like,
long do these cases can some of these cases take?
In the Glenn Mills case, for example, which we started back in 2019, it's still going now. So I mean,
right.
some of them can go forever. The cases against the Catholic Church, the Archdiocese, some of them are still going from the 80s.
So let's talk about a good point. Let's talk about the actual, you know, the organizations that, none of them are a secret. Everybody's been on the front page of the Daily News. The Catholic Church, Glenn Mills, Devereaux.
I would add in Glenn Mills, Devereaux. There's a place called Abraxas, as I said. That's run by GEO Group. That's out in western Pennsylvania.
No, are Abraxas and Devereaux still operating today?
Yes.
Okay, and Glenn Mills is closed.
Yes. So Glenn Mills.
Or did they rebrand or something?
No.
Or?
Well, I have to give our elected elected politicians in Pennsylvania a lot of credit. They refused to give Glenn Mills even under new ownership a license
to
open.
Good for
they
that.
Thank
to
God.
Good for that.
Yeah, that was the
when
best
did that happen?
Move. That was in, I believe, May of this year.
Oh, good for that.
And I know Governor Wolf in our state. You know, and that's the great thing. You don't always have to see eye to eye with everybody.
Right.
But on this
right.
issue,
this isn't a political issue.
On this
yeah.
issue,
abuse is not.
On this issue, our incoming governor Josh Shapiro and our current governor Tom Wolf, they have their fingers.
Josh
on the
Shapiro,
pulse.
High school grad of same high school. So you know, they
Josh,
as my high school promotes, the two great alma maters of Akiba Hebrew Academy, Josh Shapiro. Jake Tapper and Justin Cohen. That's kind of how they, that's kind of how they
not
promote the school.
Not necessarily in that order. Yeah. But let me just, Josh Shapiro went after the Catholic Church. By the way, he's mm-hmm.
well, he was the AG, right? He used to be. He's the AG right now.
Yeah.
For
I think so. Yeah, he's the governor elect.
Yeah,
yes.
but he,
yes.
I think he was the AG.
So he had that grand jury report that came out. He's went hard.
Oh, he doesn't mess around,
after,
man.
And not just the Catholic Church. He's went hard yeah. after these schools.
So he has, and he, he's done some high profile cases. And he wasn't afraid to go get justice, and we're all so happy about that. Having said that, we only got about 5 minutes left
okay.
in the broadcast. You had mentioned something before we came back, and that is how can people, who can they call, all those things. Their legislators are people that they can call for somebody's statute of limitation situation, so people that were barely abused can get justice. Right now, some of these situations, Justin, you mentioned that it's not a political situation, but guess what? But guess what? There are some politicians.
Okay, it shouldn't. I should have said it shouldn't be a political.
That are fighting that. That are fighting
the statute of limitations.
Who can people call to have their voices be heard, Wes?
So if anybody out there, and this is anybody out there, if you feel like you want to talk about this, but you don't want to go to an attorney necessarily or somebody like that, I know it sounds crazy, but there's a few elected politicians out there right now that are really trying and really trying to advocate this. And I would say if you're in Pennsylvania, especially if you're in Philadelphia, don't go to the district attorney's office. Don't go to Larry Krasner. Larry Krasner, there's a reason he's being impeached.
Definitely
Larry,
don't go
Larry Krasner has turned away more of those kind of cases. I would say if you're in Pennsylvania, reach out to elected representative from Berks County, Mike Rossi. He's very big into this. And if if you're trying to reach somebody, if you had went to Devereaux or such, I would say reach out to Senators Patty Murray's, Senators Ron Wyden, and our U.S. Senators right now. I don't know.
Casey, is Bob Casey one of them? Or
I don't, after the election, recall. I just know John Fetterman's one coming in.
But having said that, but also to voice your opinion about, is there any legislation on the statute of limitations? Yeah.
So right now in Pennsylvania, there is window legislation that's being talked about. And I know Josh Shapiro,
yeah.
He's already said, and Tom Wolf, but he's outgoing now. But right. Josh Shapiro said, that legislation hits his desk, he is signing. He it's not even going to be waiting a few days to sign it. The minute that comes off the printer, he said he's signing that. So right now, that's what's being pushed in Pennsylvania, a look back window. And I know Josh Shapiro is really big about this. And, you know, it's important, but you got to also remember a lot of times, and I know it sounds crazy, but a lot of times, kids who are in Pennsylvania, especially in Philadelphia, especially in Pittsburgh, they had day trips that they got taken by staff members for school activities, whether it's the Jersey Shore, whether it's an athletic event somewhere else. So it's important, not just the contact, and it's important when we talk about this, that it's not just limited to one area. So Abraxas or Glen Mills may be in Pennsylvania, but the activity went to West Virginia or somewhere else where the child got assaulted. So, I mean, it's always important that I think as a nation, we need to be pushing forward that no matter where you are, no matter how the abuse happened, that we can get it so that the victims have a voice, that some arbitrary rule about some number of years is irrelevant, and that the victims can take back their power and make the abuser have to answer questions instead of them.
Wes, if you would, and well said, contact information. We could keep going on.
Oh, so man, I know. Like we got to get Wes back.
Do me a favor.
Here,
I'm going to give it 20 seconds. What are the signs that parents should look for if they see, if they think something might have happened and the kids are afraid to tell them?
So it's different between males and females, but generally, if we're talking overall, the one thing I would say is if a child is more reclusive, if they pull away a lot more, if a child says they have secrets or issues they can't talk about, if a child doesn't take interest in activities that
and
they used
sudden,
to.
There's a sudden change, you know, I guess, in their, you know, from being, I mean.
And from what their natural personality and disposition may be.
And if you're talking about girls or females in particular, you'll start seeing that if they're being abused a lot of times that the abuser will try to sexualize them more by making them dress more provocatively. Like that's why that Balenciaga, that whole fiasco, that was disturbing on so many levels because that is exactly how grooming is done.
Contact information for you at the firm.
You can reach me. I am on Instagram at Cornerstone Legal. I'm available at my website, cornerstonelegalgroup.com, and my phone number is toll-free anywhere in the United States, 888-313-1385.
Awesome. Justin Cohen?
Joe, Wes, thanks for coming, man. You know, powerful stuff. I honestly think we got to get Wes back again because this conversation deserves another round, another hour for
100%.
Sure. Best number to reach us is my office, 856-751-7676. Can contact us through our website, peoplefirstlawyers.com. That's peoplefirstlawyers.com. Joe, thanks as always, my friend.
Joe, thank you. And I hope the next time we sit down and have this conversation, we're talking about the legislation for the statute of limitations window to be passed in Pennsylvania so we can have even a better conversation.
Yep. That'd be fantastic.
Part two on the way. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Justin Cohen Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Obviously, we want to thank Wes Cornish of the Cornerstone Law Group. Is it the
Cornerstone Legal Group? And thank you very much for having me on your show, Justin.
Our pleasure,
Thank
Wes.
You very much, Joe.
Our pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Want to thank Justin Cohen for making it happen. And, of course, everybody here at Kotler, Hernandez, and Cohen for making it happen. On behalf of Justin and on behalf of Wes, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.